the things that's really sort of affected me the most is that I've learned a whole lot from a whole bunch of people that have played there. I think that a lot of the people that have played at the cafe over the years have learned a lot about different types of music, about different types of people. I thank Lena for that. This is a song about an old hobo. Whenever I start this, everyone goes, "Oh boy, Mr. Bojangles." It's not. This fellow's name is Rye Whiskey Joe. In an old hobo jungle on the south side of town, all my friends settled down for a meal. Two cans of bacon and an old loaf of bread, anything anybody could steal. And a bottle of burgundy found its way round for tonight. Everybody was low. From the passing Joseph McSweeney, and everyone called him Rye Whiskey Joe. The chorus goes like this. Oh, Rye Whiskey Joe, there's happiness somewhere for you. Oh, Rye Whiskey Joe, somewhere out there in the blue. He hopped off a freight train 11 months back with a sort of a look in his eye, with a smile on his face and an old canvas pack that was half full of table talk pies. And he asked us if he could just stay for a while for to rest before he traveled on. But he brought us much more than expected, and that's why we're singing this song. Come on, everyone, try. Oh, Rye Whiskey Joe, there's happiness somewhere for you. Oh, Rye Whiskey Joe, somewhere out there in the blue. After eating in the evening, we'd all settle down and we'd listen while he sang his songs. With a bottle of whiskey there close by his side that he shared when the time came around. And the light in his eyes was as warm as the fire, his hair was as black as the coal. And we listened while he told his lonely old tales, and we all called him Rye Whiskey Joe. Come on, everyone. Oh, Rye Whiskey Joe, there's happiness somewhere for you. Oh, Rye Whiskey Joe, somewhere out there in the blue. He closed his eyes early one morning, and they would never open again. And we buried his gear along with him, said a prayer, fill the grave in vain. I found a letter in the tall grass nearby from a camp where he'd been long ago, saying thank you, Mr. Joseph, for all that you've done, and good luck to your Rye Whiskey Joe. One more time here. Oh, Rye Whiskey Joe, there's happiness somewhere for you. Oh, Rye Whiskey Joe, somewhere out there in the blue. Somewhere out there in the blue. Somewhere out there in the blue.
Yeah, I'm going to do a song about a place in Massachusetts called the Maples. The Maples is this country and western bar that I used to go to all the time. And I used to go there to listen to this band called Johnny White and the Country Rhythm Boys. And they were pretty good. They used to have a bass player and a lead guitar player that would get drunk and put the guitar behind his head and start picking like that. He's real good. And his name was Ray Gaudette. And there were two brothers, Johnny and Earl White, and they did all the singing and kept the show going. I wrote this song for him one time, and I played it for him at a jamboree. Now, a jamboree is a country and western hootenanny. They used to have them on Sunday afternoons, and I went up there with my band. That was my brother on drums and myself on guitar, and nobody could hear us, but we were in rhythm all the time. And I played it for Johnny White. He came up to me afterwards with tears in his eyes, said he'd never heard anything like it in his life. Please don't ever sing it again. This is back when I got into country and western music. Listen to all them country stations. You know, where this guy gets on at 4 o'clock in the morning and goes, "Friends and neighbors say $2.50, and if you get 40,000 country and western favorites, and if you say $2.50, immediately you get 40,000 more country and western favorites at no extra charge, and one great long playing record. Great hits by your great country artists. Things like, I Took a Trip to Heaven and I Didn't Even Die. And Love in the Backseat Ain't No Way to Live. I'd Like to Write a Drinking Song but Never Could Make It Past the First Two Bars. That Other Million Seller, If You Don't Stop Leaving Me Alone, I'll Find Someone Else Who Will. So I decided I'd write me a great country hit about Johnny White and the Country Rhythm Boys. I didn't, but this is a song all about the Maples. I'll leave you with this one. Complete with Everly Brothers' beginning. A 1, 2, 3, 4. I used to go to country bars, sit and watch them play guitars, and they'd order me up 6 or 7 beers. How I'd love to hang around, listen to that country sound, to the band that played Sweet Heaven in my ears. Little Ray was on guitar, and I'd watch him from the bar, and like lightning did his fingers run the strings. And the people near dropped dead when he played behind his head, doing crazy licks and lots of other things. Brother Earl would pick and sing, and white lightning was his thing, and he used to tear the place up with that song. But 'twas Johnny led the band, and there ain't no one could stand when he rolled him over with that yodel song. Yodel-ay, 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 yodel-ay. Do that yodeling song. Yodel-ay. One thing to say, it's to my dying day, I'm gonna learn to do that yodeling. Take the place down with that tune, let them hear me round the moon, have them dancing in the aisles when I sing. Yodel-ay, yodel-ay, yodel-ay. Do that yodeling song. Now, as Johnny White would say to Maples, let's pick it up out of first gear and put it in second gear and just yodeling for you.
Stain. There's a very beautiful person backstage that has a lot to do with the peace and the love that Lena has brought to all of us. Rosalie Sorrells.
Start off with a song about an alley cat. This alley cat's name is Mehitabel. She is one of my prime muses, the principal character in a book called The Life and Times of Archie and Mehitabel, which was written by this cockroach named Archie. Now, it's very hard to write a book if you are a cockroach. First thing you got to do is you got to find yourself some empty paper in a typewriter. Then you got to climb laboriously to the top of the typewriter. Then you got to jump off and bash your head on each individual key. All the poems in this book are written in the lower case on account of Archie was never quite heavy enough to depress the capital lever. He said, "I write about the city from the underside, of Freddy the Mouse and Broadway the Lightning Bug and Mehitabel the Cat." Mehitabel is this alley cat who lives in Shinbone Alley. She thinks she's the reincarnation of some Egyptian princess, probably Cleopatra. But she says, "I have been reincarnated so many times, I can't remember who I was." Now, Mehitabel has a whole lot of interesting philosophy to which I subscribe, and I'm going to lay some of it on you right now. Here's Mehitabel on the subject of marriage. "Archie," she said to the cockroach, "Archie, the other day I was walking along in Shinbone Alley and I met this big black-hearted tomcat. And he said, 'Be mine, Mehitabel.' 'Are you abducting me, Percy?' says I. 'No,' he said. 'I am offering you marriage, up-to-date, modern trial marriage.' 'Percy,' says I, 'if it's marriage, there's got to be a catch in it somewhere. It has been my experience that marriage means one damn litter after another.' 'Be mine, head of belly says, and I will offer you a life of open ice boxes, fish heads, and cream. Up to date is it, says I. Modern is it, says I. I will give it a try. I will try anything once. There's life in the old dame yet. I was wrong. Wrong. I will not go into any of the details, for I ain't no tabloid newspaper. But the upshot was that I rustled grub for that low-life bum for 3 months, and when the kittens came, he left. He says, Mehetabel, this offspring dissolves the marriage. I am always a lady, Archie. Always a lady. I did not do anything vulgar. I simply removed his right eye with my left claw. The next four-flusher who mentions marriage to me, I may lose my temper and slice him from Gehenna to Duodenum. Because trial marriage, or companionate marriage, or plain old American variety, 7 days a week, 3 meals a day with no Thursdays off marriage. Marriage is marriage, and you can't laugh off that curse. I got a limp in my left hind leg, but I'm a lady yet. My heart's been broken a thousand times, and I've been through the mill. A lot of times have come and gone, but I'm a lady still. Blowing out of the north, I'm tired of being a pet. Is brittle, but there's a dance in the old dame yet. Blowing out of the north on my bones, and I'll dance, I'll caper, I'll twist and spin right here on the alley stones. Whoa, blowing out of the north, pierce to the guts within us someday. My frozen old guts, I'm gonna string some sweet violin. Please, you bloody December. Hey now, I never could be a pet. I am a lady in spite of him. There's a dance in the old dame yet. Hey, just be somebody's tabby tame if you want to be somebody's pussy pet. But the life I lead is the life I want. And there's life in the old Jane. Yeah. I really love Mehetabel, and I identify with her a lot. She didn't always stay in Shinbone Alley where she was supposed to, you know. She roamed all over the country, got the itch to wander. Went out one time to Hollywood to see if she could become a movie star. On her way through Nevada, she got tangled up with some coyote. When the kittens came, she wrote Archie a letter. She said, "Damn them, Archie, I cannot teach them how to purr." I ran away from home when I was 33 and began wandering around. This is a true song. Probably show you why I identify so much with Mehetabel. I used to live in a big fine house with many rooms and a wide open door. All of my friends came to visit me there, but I don't answer that bell anymore. I used to live in a big fine house 20 friends or more. Now I run begging from lover to friend for a pallet on any old floor. Oh, I have gotten to be quite a rambler. I'm going by the land and the sea. And once it was aprons, dustpans and such. I've been lady. Once it was me, gave all the parties. I baked the bread, I spread the feast, I poured the wine. Now I receive all my friends in a bar, and none of the glasses are mine. But the bars hold notions of freedom and drinking with friends or all alone. I find being one with the wind and the rain, fogs over the windows of home. Oh, dustpans and such. Ah, but now, well, I'm a traveling lady. There's no more rooms to retire to. I got to move, 'cause there's no place to stay. I have nothing that's mine but my shadow. When I first ran away from home, I came east, and one of the first pallets on the floor I found was at Lena's. Since then, Lena has not only given me a place to sing often, but also a place to stay, and a great deal of love. And I'd like to sort of dedicate this song to her, because it's about what that means. You need to have friends and lovers to stay alive if you're in this kind of a business. And she is one of the best friends any of us have. If I should die before I wake, there's nothing here I've got to take with me, 'cause I've had the best, I've had the worst, I've been last. I've got into the line first. I've been hungry, I've been satisfied, and I've seen the carnival taking every ride. And if I should wake before I die, I'd never stop to wonder why. Just grab the day, I would take it and run naked. I'd be reaching for the sun, and I'd run like a rabbit, fly like a dove all around the world looking for love, sweet love. And yeah, here I lie. I'm afraid to sleep, afraid to look inside too deep. I just want to climb outside this skin, and then I find out who it is that's in there. Old friends and lovers keep me afloat, keep on rocking. Hey, it's a beautiful boat. Old friends and lovers keep me afloat, keep on rocking. Hey, it's a beautiful. Sing this one with me. This is by my friend Utah Phillips, the golden voice of the great Southwest. It's a Zen Buddhist country western song. Real easy chorus. We can all sing this one for Lena. I believe if I live my life again, I'd still be here with you. And I believe if I live my life again, I'd still be here with you. Try it with me. Oh, and I believe if I live my life again, can't hear you, I'd still be here with you. And I believe if I live my life again, I'd still be here with you. You know, I think if Lady Luck was blind, that old sun would never shine. And I believe if death really held a knife, we'd all be beggars of life. And I believe if I live my life again, I'd still be here with you. To some things I don't want to see, but I believe if you live your life again, you'd still be here with me. And I believe if I live my life again, I'd still. I'd still be Thank you very much.
Rosalie Sorrells. Well, we're just about that time of the evening, and I just want to say one thing, that all these guys that have been up here singing and stuff, they've been doing this for a long time, and this is my first job. But I've got it together now, so I don't need this anymore. I just don't even need the script. I don't need the names. I don't need to know about the entertainers. When I first got here, I had to run around and ask them, what'd you do? What'd you do? Without further ado, Arnold Godfrey. Mark of a true professional. I don't know about you, George, but I need the list. I was here last summer on the same stage. What are you clapping at that for? That was last summer. That was all right. Anyway, the reason that I was here in the first place last summer was because Cesar Chavez was here. And I just got a little note that there'll be a picket line tomorrow at the Price Chopper. So, the Price Chopper, we get them in Mass too. Madison and West Lawrence from 11 o'clock until 1:30, and that's obviously to boycott the grapes and the lettuce and the wine and Gallo, stuff like that. Talking about all, you know something? I need a vocal mic on the piano, that's the first thing. Another one of those for the piano? Great. It's getting sort of late, you know, so I feel like it can sort of be blown. Talking about grapes and lettuce. This isn't the first grape and lettuce boycott that there ever was. I mean, there have been boycotts for years. There's a lot of songs that you may not associate with boycotts. I'm going to play you one. It goes like this. Think that that's a boycott song. I know why. Because you're tired. Actually, boycotts go back as long as history goes back. It goes back to the very beginnings of Egypt, where the first pharaoh was. He was just a little kid then. And he suddenly noticed, see, at that time, all of Egypt,
and all of the whole area was beautiful forest and trees and stuff like that. Everything was growing there. And one day the Nile, that was a river there, it's still there, it had too much water in it, and it overflowed the bank. And the little Pharaoh stood there, you know, and he said, "Wow, look at that water going everywhere, man, wiping out thousands of guys." He had a sort of palatial place, you know. And he watched all the water, and it not only washed out the people, but it washed out the trees and the land and the soil. And when it was all over, it was just a lot of mud. And the Pharaoh didn't know what to do. But he knew that he had these seeds. So he went into the secret Pharaoh vault for the first time. You know, because Pharaohs generally never had to roll their own J's. I mean, they had guys around who did everything for him. You know what I mean? But the guys got wiped out. So the Pharaoh went into the thing there, you know, and he said, "Wow, what's all these seeds mixed with the leaf?" He had never seen them together before, you know. That's part of the problem. Even today, there are people that don't know that, you know. So anyway, he took the seeds and he threw them away in the mud. And it was years later. It was Pharaoh's later that they discovered something, that the seeds grew. And not only did the seeds grow from the dope, but there was everything starting to grow again. But it was growing because they went out after the flood wiped out all of the Egyptian guys, the Egyptian guys went around and started catching other guys and bringing them in there to plan all the food. You see, cheap labor. They even had it then. So they brought in all these cats, all kinds of people from everywhere, and they made them work out there in the field, growing the dope for the Pharaoh and all the other stuff. So it was one day, years later, that a little kid comes sailing down the river in a basket. Pharaoh's daughter was out there. She said, "Hey, there's a little kid floating down the river in a basket." And that far out, everybody said, "Shh, you can't say nothing about little kids floating down the river in a basket, because there's rumors going around that one of these days there'll be a little kid floating down the river in a basket, and he's going to be like a bad cat." So everybody didn't dig it. They forgot all about it. But, you know, the chick sort of, they liked him, you know what I mean? I mean, he was cute, and he was sort of, he had these far-out eyes. Eyes that, even when he was little, said, "I'm heavy." So, eventually he grew up, and he got hip, and he went around and he noticed what was going on. And one day, he found out that he was one of those cats out there in the field. Except that he wasn't out there with them. He was hanging around with the chicks in the palace, eating grapes and lettuce, smoking dope. He said, "Man, I can't handle this scene at all." So he went out there, just like in the movie, and he started getting muddy, you know what I mean? And you couldn't tell him from the other guys. Oh, yeah. And then one day he got mad. And he went up to the Pharaoh and he said, "Pharaoh, you gotta let us cats split." The Pharaoh said, "Mose, you gotta be kidding. I mean, you're supposed to be my friend. You can't split." But Moses got hip with his brother. See, his brother was a hip cat. And he said, "Not only that," Mose said, "not only am I going to split, but I want to split with some dope." Well, that really burned the Pharaoh up. I mean, that freaked him out. He went out of his gourd right there, and he freaked out so much, he said, all right, go ahead, man. Go ahead. Take my stash. Take my workers, man. Take my slaves. Go ahead, split, man. See how you make out. So Mose got together all the cats, and he ground up all the dope, and they put it on their backs, and they started walking across the desert. And you got to remember, that was no easy thing, because the desert had never been walked on before. So it wasn't packed down like it is now. I mean, they were sinking in up to their knees and their waist, and the wind was blowing, and the sun was hot. And man, it was a drag. And they had no shades. Oh, man. And they was sweating, and they was working in the key of E minor. And they was going down the road, you know what I mean? Traveling down the highway, all of that kind of stuff. And there they was. And the sun was so hot that it baked all of that dope right on their backs. And it turned it into brownies. Now, Moses was a hip cat, and everybody wanted to eat them brownies. He said, wait a minute, boys. Don't eat the brownies until you get real hungry, because this is a long trip we're on. Meanwhile, back at the palatial palace, the Pharaoh stopped freaking, because he changed his mind. He said, wait a minute, what have I done? I let Mose go with the folks and the stash. He says, get the heat. Get the cops, get the sheriff, get the army, get everybody, get the spears, and get them out there, and get those weirdo freaks back here with my stash. Mose didn't know that, but he knew the Pharaoh pretty well, so pretty soon they was running through the desert. But the people, they couldn't dig Mose for too long, so pretty soon they started chomping on the brownies. Pretty soon, they was dancing through the desert. Pretty soon, they was running. They was skipping. They was dancing and running, skipping, shouting, going wild. Dancing through the desert with Moses. Dancing through. But right on their heels was the bad cats coming down the desert, already packed down by the thousands and thousands of cats with Moses. Oh, it was easy for them. The chariots and the spears and the whole bad guys coming after them. Finally, Moses and the freaks end up on the shore of a big, great, big ocean. And everybody stopped. Said, uh-oh. There's a big ocean there, Mose. And they could see the dust of the bad guys coming down the line. They could see the cops coming after them. They knew it was a bust. Not only it was a bust, it was like a plant. Mose wasn't freaked. Mose had those eyes, the same eyes he had when he was a little kid. And he looked them all in the eye. He said, don't worry about it. Let's eat them brownies now. And they all ate the brownies. And they jumped in the water because they was thirsty. You know how thirsty you get when you eat brownies, smoke dope, or something like that? They jumped in the water. And they drank it. And they played in it. And they started swimming. And they were swimming like it's going out. They were swimming like, all of a sudden, they was halfway across. And Mose said, let's just swim the other half, because going back is the same as going forward. So everybody said, Mose is a pretty hip cat. Let's swim. Oh, they started swimming. And they're swimming. But pretty soon, the bad cats was coming. The suddenly pulled up and it screeched to the end of the ocean. They said, "Whoa, look at them weirdo freaks swimming across the ocean. What kind of dumb scene is that? We better go right in there, because if we go back without Moses and the stash, the Pharaoh ain't gonna like it." So they jumped in there and they started swimming after Moses and the kiddies. But their badges were so heavy that they drowned. Now, don't wait, this ain't the end of the story. It's almost the end. I mean, it's the end of the night. I'm through. But the thing was, see, that the kiddies didn't see those cats drowning. They just coming in after them. So some of them who wasn't looking back was swimming like mad. Well, Moses got up on a big rock. And finally, after the whole thing was over,